the litter issue in Jordan, and I'm very distressed about it. So I wrote three books that are giving messages to children, anti-litter messages to children. Hopefully they pass it on to their parents and to the population here so we can clean the country up.
And what are the names of the books?
I have Anza Alaziza Cleans Up Petra. I have Anza Alaziza Protects the Forest. And I have Anza Azizi and Her Zero Footprint Print Lesson. Anza means goat in Arabic, and Aziza means precious, so it's like a precious goat. And so she's giving lessons about how to clean up, keep your country clean.
Now, as someone who's been here since she was 22, you're the perfect person to ask this. Give me the place where you like to go to dinner that's not in the brochure, that's not in the guidebook, that is like your favorite place in Amman.
I have great favorite places in Amman, but I have a very favorite place that's down toward Aqaba. I love Aqaba, but I love the Echo Lodge in Fanan. And that's one of my very favorite places that I like to go to.
And why?
And why? Because it is so special. They've tried to do everything there so environmentally green, and it's quiet, and it's an adventure to get there because the road is terrible, and you have to go in a four-wheel drive, and you jiggle yourself to death, but it's so worth it when you get there because there's no electricity, and they use only solar, and so it's quiet and peaceful. And
sounds like a great place to write a book.
It's a great place. I need to do one on, I think I need to do one on Fanan.
And if truth be told, if you're really nice when you come to Jordan, and you're really nice when you're in Amman, and you go to Karen's house, she might make you kanafe. I know. Okay, I opened the door. Okay, that's enough. Karen Osborne, thanks. Is that a less than subtle hint or what?
I'll buy you some. I'm not going to make it.
Okay, thanks. Karen Osborne, thanks for joining us.
Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know exactly what to do. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. I remember a good 20 years ago hearing about locations throughout Jordan that attempts were made to preserve them as natural preserves, nature areas untouched by crazy development. And then about 10 or 12 years ago, I actually went to one in Dana, in the reserve there. And they were really trying to figure out a way before we came up with the buzzwords of sustainable and the buzzwords of green or carbon footprint. And now I think they've done it. They've come up with something called the Fanan Eco Lodge. And joining me now, the guy who runs it, Nabil Tarazi. Hi, Nabil.
Hi, Peter.
I mean, bottom line is, you heard the terms I used.
Yes, I have, of course.
Which are often misleading. People tend to define them in ways that only benefit them and as opposed to the bigger picture. So define for me, if you can, what your Eco Lodge is doing that other people aren't.
I'll tell you what's unique about what we have. We have a lodge, which is a hotel in the middle of nowhere in a nature reserve called Dana. And it has an ethos that is very unique, different from anywhere else. And the ethos stands on four pillars. The first one is to offer guests unique and authentic experiences tied to nature, the history, the environment that we are in. The second one is to contribute to conservation work. The third one is to benefit the local community. And the fourth, to do it all with the minimal impact on the environment.
Well, you said the third one, which is always gets my attention, the benefit of the local community, because so many places will tell you they're doing a great job, but the money never gets back to the people who need it the most.
At Fanan, it's very different. 55% actually of what the guest pays stays in the immediate local community. I'm not talking about in Jordan, I'm talking about the community of Fanan. Basically, all the employees are local staff. All the services that we get come from the local community. We have women that break bread out of their own goat hair tents that serve the lodge. We do experiences to take the guests to the home of the local communities, and they're effectively go to her tents, and we do experiences there, how to make bread, how to do the coffee, how to do the makeup, all these things. And all the benefit that we collect from the guests goes to the community member who's providing that experience.
So they can easily connect the dots and follow the money.
Yes, very true. I mean, at the lodge, we have 80 families, around 400 people that benefit directly from the existence of that lodge in this location.
Wow. And how long did it take you to put this together?
We did not do it ourselves. The lodge was done by an NGO in Jordan called the Royal Society for the Conservation of Nature. Jordan is very unique in the sense that it's a conservation organization that handles all the nature reserves. They built the lodge in 2005. The company that I operate, Eco Hotels, we took over the management in 2009, and we turned it from a property that was a very environmentally friendly property to a destination. We created awareness, we created the experiences that are offered by the place, we made it much more green than before, and became a destination for people who want something very unique and different in Jordan.
And what can I do there that I can't do anywhere else?
It's the whole experience at Finan has a lot for everybody. It starts from arriving at the lodge. You arrive at the lodge during daytime, you see this unique building in the middle of nowhere, literally in the middle of nowhere.
Now, you say it's the middle of nowhere, give me a sense of place. We're in Amman. So how long does it take us to get there?
2.5 hours by road.
On rugged road.
No, 2.5 hours on
regular
road.
And then
the last half an hour is off-road.
It's sheer terror.
It's not terror. It's an off-road to get to the lodge so that it's very remote. And the beauty about it, we have a sunset hike, spectacular sunset hike overlooking Wadi Araba, which is in the south of Jordan. We have stargazing. The lodge is totally off the grid. We generate our electricity using the sun. So we only have electricity lights in the bathrooms. Aside from that, it's all candlelit. So you go on the rooftop terrace after dinner, and you have a spectacular sky with no artificial light pollution around you. The next day, there are lots of experiences that you can do, from hikes to experiences with the local community, to doing a cooking class at the lodge, or getting the chef of the lodge do a cooking demonstration, show you how to cook things. So it's a very different experience that you can do, or you can just go and sit and chill out, relax. You're literally in the middle of nowhere,
and
quiet.
But there's wildlife.
There is limited wildlife. Part of the problem with Jordan is the NGO that I was talking about, the Royal Society for the Conservation of Nature, was started by ex-hunters. They found out that they hunted most of what existed in Jordan.
Whoops.
So they started conserving. So the reserve where we are, you might be able to see ibex.
I've seen the ibex.
So you will see these things, but it's not this massive wildlife that you would get in Africa. That's the problem that we have in Jordan. But the NGO is restoring and bringing back, reintroducing some of the wildlife that existed in the reserve. So it's a continuing process.
Great. And if you can survive the last half hour on the road, then you get to chill out.
Yeah, the half hour is not bad, actually. You know, it's a fun ride. We use the local community to provide the shuttle service to benefit the local community. So you're in this beat-up pickup. Most of the guests decide not to sit inside the pickup. They will go in the back because it's very fun.
They stand up,
sit down, whatever they want.
And hold on.
Yeah, you hold on. But it's not too bad. It's not as bad as you make it sound to be.
It's an adventure.
It is an adventure.
Okay, you agree with that?
I agree with you 100%.
Okay, good. And the name of the lodge, of course, is Finan.
Finan Eco Lodge, that's correct.
Wow, amazing. Nabil Tarazi, thanks for joining us, man.
Thank you, Peter.
And that music means we're out of time for this hour. Everybody stick around. We got a whole lot more coming from Amman, Jordan, as Peter Greenberg Worldwide returns right after this. Hey, check out the lodge. I'm telling you, it's pretty cool.
Been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide on this third weekend in October. If you're just joining us, let me tell you where we are. Get out your maps, boys and girls. 31 degrees, 56 minutes north, 35 degrees, 55 minutes east. We are in Amman, Jordan, the capital. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you absolutely know the drill. You email me to Peter at Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Actually, it's Peter at PeterGreenberg.com. I am Peter Greenberg Worldwide. With your name, phone number, question, or problem, we will solve it right here on the air. We're about to do that. You can also follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Peter S. Greenberg, or on Facebook, Facebook.com/Peter Greenberg. What an amazing place Jordan is. You've been hearing me sing its praises for a long time. I've been coming here for a long time. You know, it's got the lowest point on earth, the Dead Sea, which it shares with Israel. It's so many World Heritage Sites here. I mean, too many to even list. And yet it's all drivable. It's all doable. It's all manageable. And of course, look at the map. Look at where Jordan exists. In a relatively tough neighborhood, surrounded by some relatively unstable neighbors. Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, and others. And yet, Jordan remains a beacon of stability. In fact, its heritage is all about accepting refugees. The fourth largest city in Jordan right now is Syrian refugees. How about that? And yet, we're not talking crime here. We're not talking terrorism here. We're talking about a welcoming, hospitable location, deep, deep, and rich in culture and music and food and all sorts of fun things to do, especially out in the desert. So if you're sitting at home going, where do we want to go this year? You might want to put it on the list, which of course will be going against most of your bucket lists because your bucket list is built on a comfort level that's not realistic. And it's all about the worst four-letter word that starts with F, and that's called fear, which you need to get rid of as soon and as fast as you can. Hey, let's talk about some emails while I got you, because I promised. Here's one from Ronald Herrera. Peter, I'm looking for ways to find more off-the-beaten-path local experiences when I travel. Well, a shout-out to you, Ronald. It's a good idea that you do that. I spend a lot of time in the Middle East, and when I'm there, it's easy to have really meaningful experiences because I have a network of friends and a knowledge of the language and area. How can I find this in other parts of the world that I'm less familiar with? I'm going to give you two suggestions, and I'm telling you right now, Ronald, they work like a charm. It's all about asking the locals. Now, there's two ways to do it. I mean, there are many ways to do it, but I'm going to give you two. One is, and that is, go to our website, petergreenberg.com, for our comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that wonderful aid work all around the world, all these great volunteer opportunities for you to give back every time you travel. Well, who do you think runs these organizations? The locals, the people who actually live there. Who best to point you in the right direction to have the kind of great local experiences you can't find in the guidebooks, you can't find in the brochures, and in many cases, you can't find anywhere else. That's number one. Here's number two. And these are the unsung heroes. And this is no, I'm not trying to dump on hotel concierges. I don't. I think they perform a valuable and a great service. But I want to go one step beyond that. Who better to give me advice about not only the community where the hotel is located, but the surrounding communities around that hotel than the maids at the hotel, the bellhops, the doorman, the people who live in those neighborhoods and hang out in those locations? Your best source of information may not be those rack of brochures or those racks of brochures in the hotel lobby offering organized tours. Your best bet might be to talk to the maid in the hallway between her cleaning the rooms and asking her advice or the bellman's advice or the doorman's advice as to where you should go hang out in the neighborhood in which they live. Some of the most memorable experiences and in some cases life-changing experiences I've had is when I've done that and the response that I get is amazingly positive. I make lifelong friends. And what gets changed in the process? Huh, your outlook on life, how you view the world, and how you then absorb a culture, a people, and a location in ways you otherwise would never even think about it. So those are my two ways to tell you how to do that, and you really should try that out. Because otherwise, you know, you're going to stay in the hotel and order a cheeseburger and think you've had an adventure. And that's really not, that's boring, don't you think? Here's one from Mark Chabon in Sacramento, California. I end up traveling about 75% of the time for work, both in the U.S. and internationally. I keep reading about hackers using remote scanners to skim data off of bank cards, and I have to admit that my cards are getting compromised a few too many times for my liking. A few too many times? Hey, how about once is enough? So he asks, what do you do for protection when traveling? Can passport information be jacked? What about information on smartphones via the scanners? Well, look, anybody who tells you that your information is safe or encrypted these days is delusional. Hey, just ask the United States government or Hillary Clinton or anybody else who's been hacked. The bottom line is this. You need to do a more responsible job on your own in monitoring your accounts. And where you pack them makes a difference. Where you use them makes a difference. How many of you will succumb to the idea of free public Wi-Fi in a square of a town or at an airport? Or at a busy train station. That's, you know, target number one for hackers who can steal a lot of information off your screen, especially if you're doing things that you think are efficient for you at that time, like personal banking or anywhere where you have to list your credit card with all those other dates like expiration date and three-digit, you know, security code. That's not the place to do them. When I say you have to be more responsible about your own accounts, there are two things I will suggest. Number one, you never want to pack all of your credit cards and all of your ID cards in one wallet. That is a recipe for disaster. You want to pack your main card, maybe in your wallet, and a backup card somewhere else in a briefcase or a handbag or back at the hotel in a safe, just so you have a get-out-of-jail card free if you lose your card or it gets hacked. That's number one. Number two, tell your credit card company that you're leaving the country, sometimes even leaving the state, because the minute you don't tell them that and you start using that card to make purchases, even if it's for a small amount, you may be violating your purchasing pattern because they weren't expecting you to be in that location. And number three, and just as important, and you can access this online every day, look at your credit card statement for small charges that you may not have made. That's what the hackers do. They test your account by making small charges of under $20. And then if that goes through, you know where they go next? Best Buy. You know what I'm saying. Hey, back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide when we return to Amman in Jordan right after this.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from Amman, Jordan, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you can do this one in your sleep, boys and girls. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. And as I do every week at this time, I encourage you to go to our website with the most imaginative name on the planet, petergreenberg.com, for our comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that hard and essential work all around the world, opportunities for you to give back and help people every time you travel. And we always like to localize the volunteerism opportunities, and of course, Jordan is no exception. You heard her earlier in the show, the Princess Aliyah Foundation, a great way to volunteer with their great new sanctuary here in Amman with animals of all kinds that have been smuggled or sold or illegally imported. And they're really giving these animals a place to live out their lives in safety and in better health. And at the same time, they're also helping to preserve the planet because they're earmarking 140 acres of forest that no longer has to be cut down, which is great. If you want to volunteer, anybody can do it as long as they're over the age of 18. And if they're under the age of 18, they can do it too because just accompanied by an adult. No experience necessary, which means they'll even let me volunteer. If you want more information, go to the PrincessAliyahFoundation.org. My next guest, I normally see him when I'm in London. He usually bicycles over to see me. He's a huge bicyclist. He's laughing because he knows it's true. He's the editor-at-large for The Independent, but I find him tonight in Abu Dhabi. Simon Calder, how are you, sir?
I've just literally got off my bicycle, Peter, because I've been cycling around the Formula One track. They open it up a couple of evenings a week. to the people, and they lend you a bicycle, very good bicycle, free of charge, and you can actually cycle around the very same track that the...
I want to do that. I want to do that. I could just see it.
Extraordinary thing.
With me, it would be like, and here he comes around the turn at 19 miles an hour.
No, but it's great. It's a real sense of community. And I must say, as a Brit, with the pathetic pound at the moment, it's really good to be here in Abu Dhabi when there are so many things which are free of charge, such as the remarkable tour around the Sheikh Zayed Grand Mosque.
I have done that. It blows me away. It's sort of like and I'm not saying this in a negative way, I'm just still wowed by the idea that when they built that mosque, they had an unlimited budget and they managed to exceed it.
Exactly. Like so much in Abu Dhabi, and it's really interesting, the tension. Just 100 miles apart, Abu Dhabi and Dubai. And Abu Dhabi, the emirate of the seven United Arab Emirates, which has 80% of the area and the vast majority of the oil. And yet Dubai, its kind of little brother down the road, was a real upstart and said, okay, well, but we got trade, and they basically turned Dubai from somewhere that aircraft in the, you remember this, in the 80s, you had to put down somewhere to refuel, then they developed new engines and you could fly straight over it, but they said, no, hey, wait a minute, and they, of course, established Dubai International Airport, now the world's busiest international airport.
Well, you know what, Simon, and, what's interesting about that, and you brought that up, I remember in 1984... as a present to my mom, I bought a round the world ticket, and I took her around the world. And we went. It was both the Thai Airways and Singapore Airlines, and so we were in Bangkok, and we flew to Singapore, and then we're going from Singapore to London on Singapore Airlines. And in those days, they had a 747, but it didn't have the range. So like every other plane in the region, it stopped for fuel, as you said, in Dubai. And what Dubai was known for then, and it was only known for then, were a bunch of Irish guys who opened up the wildest duty-free store I've ever seen in my life. And every plane that landed there, like 1 in the morning, it became you talk about a race. It was a Formula One race to go through duty-free because everybody came racing off those planes to buy everything they possibly could. And then you would literally see them cramming that stuff back on the planes. And you couldn't understand the physics of how that thing could get airborne, because I saw a Polish Airlines plane come in, and the entire plane went. Everybody on that plane went running in and came back with cases of Johnny Walker, and I was like, how did this plane get back in the air? I mean, they were selling everything there, from a Mercedes to a fur coat to anything you could imagine, and that's still the duty free operation in Dubai is still amazing.
It certainly is. And of course, well, we could talk all evening about how the Polish entrepreneurs, even during communism, were the masters of buying and selling and arbitrage and everything else. But look, of course, Dubai is now this glittering, I call it Las Vegas on sea. I must say I actually prefer Las Vegas. But Abu Dhabi, in retaliation, and yes, clearly money is no object, thought, no, we're not going to do what they've done, which is build just 20-lane highways and line them with skyscrapers. We're going to do a bit of that, but we're also going to attract some culture. So they have persuaded the Louvre in Paris to contribute to a new museum, which is running a little bit late. They hope to open it up maybe sometime next year. They got the Guggenheim there. They've got all these star architects designing stuff. And it's a place which, of course, it's an empty bit of desert by the Gulf. But my goodness me, they are putting quite a lot of thought into it and trying, of course, through Etihad, the national airline of Abu Dhabi, to wrest some of the business from Emirates down the road in Dubai.
Well, you know, there's a great story to be told about airlines and especially airplanes. If you take a look at the world's airline fleet of Airbus 380s, the largest commercial passenger plane in the sky, you may see that British Airways might have 6 or 7, and Air France might have 5 or 6, or Singapore Airlines might have 5 or 6, or Lufthansa might have 5 or 6, and Etihad has a couple, and Qatar has a couple. And then here comes Emirates. I think they have something like 74. They're flying these planes from Dubai to Vienna. I have no idea how they could fill an A380 every day from Dubai to Vienna. They're flying one every day, by the way, from Dubai to Kuwait. How long a flight could that be?
Oh, well, but they are the masters of hub and spoke. They're the masters of, in that latter case, tactical misuse of large aircraft. You know, if you've got a few hours, you might as well just fly 380 from Dubai up to Kuwait and back. And it's also doing the world's longest flight, I understand. It started off with a 777, but I think it's now an A380, which is from Dubai nonstop to Auckland, New Zealand. And
I know the time of that flight. Do you know I know how long that is. Do you know how long it is?
I'm going to guess it's 18 hours. But
actually, it's 18 hours and 55 minutes.
Peter.
Yeah, 18 hours and 55 minutes. I mean, bring a copy of Gone with the Wind and then bring, it's unbelievable. I mean, War and Peace, I mean, you might be able to finish the book, you know?
Yeah. Well, but Tim Clark, the really quite visionary president of Emirates, says if you feed people, if you give them good in-flight entertainment, they simply won't notice.
Well, you know what? We certainly do notice when they don't. I mean, there's no getting around that. If EasyJet or Ryanair offered me the longest flight in the world, they'd have to shoot me.
Yeah.
They just have to put
me. If the price is right, people will take it. And of course, Emirates with all those Airbus A380s, they are just running the world's greatest hub and spoke operation. And wherever you are, you're in Vienna, you're in Copenhagen, you're in Manchester, England, second or third biggest city in England, and they have three Airbus A380s a day flying out to Dubai. There's so much demand for connections. Three a day. They're just moving up. Yep, exactly. So you're talking there about well over 1,500 people just flying on one airline from a provincial city in northern England to Dubai, and then connecting there for Auckland, maybe for Kuwait, as you say. Anywhere in Africa, Asia, Australasia, there is a departure that is connecting with your arrival. It's a brilliant piece of work, and of course, it's causing huge problems for the more traditional airlines who are still offering point-to-point services, including, of course, British Airways. But they're getting nicely tucked up with Qatar Airways, which is now, I think, the owner of one-fifth of British Airways. So we're getting there.
Simon, stick with us, because when we come back, speaking of the Brits, we got to talk about Brexit and how the dynamics have changed in affordability in terms of travel. We're talking with Simon Calder, the editor-at-large for The Independent, calling us in from Abu Dhabi. Back with more from Amman right after this.
Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from Amman, Jordan, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know exactly what to do. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. We've been speaking with Simon Calder, the editor-at-large for The Independent in London. Normally, we speak to him in London. When we're there, well, we're in Amman, so why wouldn't we want to speak to him in Abu Dhabi? Because that's exactly what we're doing. Hey, Simon.
I think one time zone away from you, Peter.
Exactly. So, speaking of one time zone away, let's talk about some wild currency fluctuations in the wake of Brexit. I mean, for Americans, all of a sudden, so many countries, especially in Europe and including the UK, become miraculously affordable.
Oh, it's absolutely fantastic. And very interestingly, talking to some of the tourism folks in the southern US and Florida and Texas and so on, they say we've got a bit of a problem, because if you look at the northeast US market, Boston down to Washington, New York, of course, they are so close to the UK particularly, and there's such good deals on in London and the rest of Britain, that actually we're worried they're going to be flying over there rather than flying down here. It's a real fire sale. Your dollar is worth about one-sixth more than it was just a few months ago before the European referendum, and there's talk that it's going to get another 10% better as well. So it's a great time to be an American traveller in Britain. It's a lousy time to be a British traveller anywhere, with the possible exception of Nicaragua, where the pound is holding up quite well. In places such as the United Arab Emirates, where I'm speaking to you from, of course, their currency is locked to the US dollar. So the pound loses 1/6 against the dollar. It also loses 1/6 against the dirham here. And the cruel arithmetic of exchange rates means that everything is costing 1/5 more for me than it was a few months ago.
Well, I hope you leave soon then.
Well, it is pretty painful. I've been looking at the numbers around the world. A British family spending just a day at the Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World in Florida, they will be spending close to £400, which these days is around, not much over $400, in fact. But all those prices have risen. The Sydney Harbour Bridge climb for a family of four now costs as much as one person's round trip from London to Sydney. That is extraordinary numbers, and every Brit I know is trading down. In fact, I've got a film shoot coming up next week in Florida. I've had to talk to the crew and say, look, when we planned this back in May, we planned it on the basis of the pound being worth something. Now it's not anymore, and we're actually doubling up in hotel rooms because it's the only way to get the numbers to balance. Exciting time to be a British traveller. We are a little panicky.
No kidding. But what that means is there's an opportunity for people listening to the show who want to go to the UK and want to go to parts of Europe where the euro is not doing much better and actually have a pretty good time. And the interesting thing, Simon, the most interesting thing is what I'm seeing in airfares, not just in Europe, but around the world. I'll give you an example. The New York to Washington round trip on Delta Airlines on the shuttle, a flight that lasts 38 minutes in each direction, can be as high as $809. The round trip airfare last week from New York to Hong Kong on Cathay was $550. So there is no sense to this. Right? So
it's whatever the market will bear. Yeah.
So it is a buyer's market.
There's an awful lot. Sure. There's a huge amount of oversupply of seats. And I'll tell you what, if you get a cheap transatlantic deal in London, then you will be able to travel really cheaply from there. Ryanair, the biggest low-cost airline in the world after Southwest of the US, of course, has said this winter fares are going to fall by 10 to 12%. Add in the collapse in the in sterling, and if you're buying in US dollars, you're going to be paying maybe only 3/4 what you would for flights last year. So you can effectively fly into London and then just go off and see Europe from there. And I must say, one place I would strongly recommend is France. They've been through some awful times in terms of terrorism, of course. They are now more welcoming than I've ever known. They're also prepared to deal. I was just over in Paris. The cheapest hotel room normally I would find is a decent hotel room, about €100, so maybe $110. And you just go in on the afternoon and you just negotiate, and you might get it for €70. So that's about $80. It's very, very good time.
An $80 hotel room in Paris is almost unheard of. But the beautiful thing about it, it's not just airfares, it's local goods and services. It's what a cab ride costs or a tube of toothpaste or what the locals buy anyway. When your dollar goes that far, you'd be silly not to try it, especially at this time of the year.
Most certainly, it's a great time. It's off-peak all the way through to kind of mid-December. So, you know, you almost can name your price. It's a terrific time to be a traveller. And look, it's not going to last forever. It might for a good few years to Britain, but we will get ourselves safe.
Yes, you will. Simon Calder, the editor-at-large from The Independent in London, our good friend who's now bicycling his way around the Formula One racetrack in Abu Dhabi, because it's probably free. Thanks, Simon. We really appreciate that. Back with more from Peter Greenberg Worldwide in Amman, Jordan, right after this.
Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you in Amman, Jordan, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-888-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know exactly what to do. you email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. We've done it at the top of the hour. We're going to do it a little bit later as well. In this election year, all eyes are glued to the television sets, in America at least, to watch the circus known as our presidential campaign. Saturday Night Live wakes up every morning, the cast, thanking the candidates for giving them such material that they could never get on their own. Every comedian is just falling over laughing, as we are as well. And it's also quite disturbing, too. And all that humor comes out of a lot of angst and stress and basically depression. Being that as it may, here we are in Jordan, and there's comedy here, too.
Yeah, hopefully.
There's comedy here, too. In fact, the Arab world's first ever comedy in both English and Arabic.
Yeah.
Political satire, right?
Exactly. It's social and political, yeah.
And like the person on that other end of the microphone is Faris Haradine, who's the co-star of a show called My American Neighbor.
Yes.
Tell me the premise.
Okay, the premise is this. We have this wonderful American guy. His name is Brett Weir. He lived in Jordan since 2007. And he loved the country, and we became really good friends through comedy, along with another guy. Now, what's really unique about this this relationship is that I'm a Jordanian Catholic, and he's an American Protestant. And the third guy is the Muslim guy, our friend Nadir Khawalde. So actually, religion has its toll in this region. And it's really unique how we were able to deliver a message of peacemaking and how reconciliation and throughout the whole project. Yeah. And what else? I'm really excited to be here, and I'm honored to meet you personally.
Oh, and vice versa. What's interesting, though, is you wouldn't think in certain countries that political satire would not have consequences. You make fun of certain governments in certain countries, you're not on the air very long.
That's really true. But really, the atmosphere here, the whole theme started more than 15 years ago. And that was by the two guys. One guy, his name is Nabil Sawalha, and the other guy, his name is Hisham Yanis. Both, they established this type of art, satire, where they'll be impersonating different political figures. Okay. Now, speaking about My American Neighbor, the whole idea is that Brett was living between Arab friends, and it was the comedy will be from the cultural differences. For example, if you're in Jordan and someone tells you that's a nice watch, okay, the first thing you say to him, مقدمة, which means you can take it. You can take it, okay? But that's actually not really a genuine you can take it. It's just like, it's a social thing. But in the series, we see that Abu Trad, I'm playing Abu Trad, he's a guy, he's a bit grumpy, and he's in his late 40s, early 50s. So when he said, you can take it, and then Ricky, who is Brett Weir, the American guy, he said, oh, really? Thank you. And then he takes the watch. And here the conflict starts, you know what I mean? And we have a lot of stuff that goes in between this family.
But the comedy is about local Jordanian politics, too.
It has some implications. Like, for example, Abu Trad will show that part in the Arab world where he's... a lot of Jordanians, some they believe that they have some hostile emotions towards the states, and that's because of the foreign policy, etc. He will speak that in the show, but in a funny way, because at the end of the day, we will see that they get along a lot, and they're all the time they're together.
What about the royal family? Can you talk about them at all?
To be honest,
no.
No, we don't.
Not a good idea.
It's not the best idea, but it depends how. Because the late play which I participated in was Sarha Rab Raiha, and actually there's a guy who impersonated the king. So he was,
and he's still alive.
He's still alive.
Oh, okay, just double checking.
Yeah, he's still
the name
alive.
Of your show, though, is My American Neighbor. It's both in Arabic and English.
And English, yeah.
That's very, very cool. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, actually, the thing is, the Jordan media scene is primitive. Okay, and one of the challenges that we were facing while filming is the investing potential. I mean, we're looking for investors. Yeah,
but I can still watch the show.
What?
I can still watch the show.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I hope
you got it. Feroz Haddadin, thank you for joining us,
and thank you for hosting me.
You got a deal. Back with more from Aman right after this.
Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from Aman, Jordan. And if you just are joining us or just heard the last segment about My American Neighbor, you can watch it on YouTube. Just go to My American Neighbor. It's right there on YouTube, and it's in English. Time to do some emails. I've been promising doing that, and here we go. Here's one from Thomas Pavlovic. He's a doctor. How do I collect my VAT refund I could not obtain at the Milan Airport because they were closed at the time of my 5 a.m. departure? Well, this is a continuing problem for those of us who actually want to save some money when we travel abroad. The value-added tax, the VAT refund, should be available in more convenient places at airports. It's sort of like the TSA. They're never like open the lines when you have to be there. So here's the problem. When you buy, and the rules are quite strict, and that is, let's say you buy an item that's subject to a VAT refund, and the merchant will tell you this. You may even see the sign on the door saying, we'll get you a VAT refund. He fills out a form, or she fills out a form. You give them your passport number. You let them know on the form if you want the VAT refund in the form of a credit on your credit card or in local currency. And then they put it in an envelope, which they don't seal, because you're then supposed to take it to the airport on the day of departure and go to the VAT office. So far, so good, and show them the form. Well, most of the VAT offices, before they give you the refund, also want you to show them the item that you bought. The problem is that VAT office is after you've checked in for your flight. So there's a reasonably good chance you've already checked that item in and can't show it, like an article of clothing that you don't happen to be wearing at that moment. So be advised of that. The second thing is, which is what happened to you, doctor, is the VAT office wasn't open. Well, the only good news I can tell you is that most of these VAT deals have an expiration date of about 6 months from the date of purchase. So if you happen to go back to Europe, and it doesn't have to be Milan, it can be any one of the countries that participates in the VAT refund scheme, and you can find that online, hold on to that form, show the item, and you'll get the refund. It's still not the most convenient thing in the world. Quite frankly, I have not seen an airport yet that works it well, because it's sort of an afterthought and they throw it in there. And at certain times of the day, you will see certain people from certain countries who are huge consumers, like the Chinese, the Russians, and the Indians, standing in a long line for the VAT refund with all of their purchases in boxes. And it's just, it looks like the bad returns window at Macy's. Anyway, just be aware that at least you have that 6 months of validity to be able to do it at another location should you be returning to Europe to one of those countries anytime soon. Here's one from Raj Singh in India. I'm an Indian national planning a trip with my girlfriend to Egypt. My girlfriend is also an Indian. Can both of us stay together in the same hotel, or because of religious values, there are chances of facing some problem there? What is the way out of this? All our hotel bookings are in 5-star hotels or cruise. And the answer is, yes, you can. There is no problem that I've ever experienced in Egypt. If you were going to Saudi Arabia, that would be a whole other issue. But since you're not, you will not have a problem in Egypt, and I hope that works out well. Here's one from David Bindle, who says, one of my guilty pleasures is visiting destinations of film locations of some of my favorite movies when I'm in the area. Have you had any really good experiences visiting a destination film location? Where is your favorite, and where would you like to visit in the future? Well, my favorite continues to be where we're broadcasting from right now, at least in Jordan. It's Petra. That's the old Treasury building. The Nabataeans did it. An amazing culture. It's withstood time and flood and sandstorms. And it was the site, of course, for Raiders of the Lost Ark, the Steven Spielberg movie. And short of seeing Indiana Jones whip the whip, you do get to experience, you know, exactly where it is the minute you see it. It's an indelible image and well worth the trip. Keep in mind, as we talked about earlier in the show, you can go back there 15 times and maybe just scratch the surface of all the things you're going to see. Now, here's one from Hensha Diaz in Miami. I've done my fair share of traveling, and I've noticed a substantial upswing in the amount of fully booked flights I'm taking. It seems like 90% of the flights I take are either fully booked or very close to it. It's not even particular to one region. Over the past couple of years, I've flown a dozen times to Europe, America, Middle East, on various different airlines. I've also flown throughout the year, and even in the off-season, the flights are fully booked. So what's going on? Hensha asks. Are all airlines consolidating flights, or are there just substantially more people around the world flying nowadays? The answer is correct on both counts. There are more people flying. This year, more than 1.2 billion, did you hear that? 1.2 billion people will cross an international border. And at the same time, airlines have figured out the secret to their success is capacity discipline, otherwise known as shrink the airline. And as a result, law of supply and demand coupled with less capacity, fewer flights, fewer seats, fewer destinations, then it's no longer a surprise that every single plane that you could be on, with exceedingly few exceptions to that, is completely full. That's the name of the game. So because of that, you will notice on the seating charts when you go to make a reservation, they only show middle seats available. Don't believe that for a minute. The airline's just holding back because they know the plane's going to be full, and they're holding back to some of their more higher-class passengers in terms of their mileage category. All the more reason to make a phone call when you're booking that flight to find out if there's inventory that's not online that you can get without paying a huge premium. Hey, that music means we're out of time for the whole show. A lot of people to thank. Dara Stone, our chief producer. Frank Porco back on the boards in Connecticut. Tim Hill doing the boards here. Omar Shreem and Malia Asfor, we love you. Thanks, guys, to the entire staff of the Jordanian Tourist Board and also the folks here at the Grand Hyatt on Amman. We'll see you next week, everybody, from another location somewhere around the world. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com.